We're in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. 2 Corinthians 10. The last part of the verse or chapter. Last week we noted that with chapter 10 it really starts moving into a little different flavor after a couple of chapters on giving to the needs in Jerusalem. Paul now returns to some upfront criticisms or directives to the church at Corinth. And it follows some of his defense that he made earlier, but it has a little different flavoring at the same time. And it is a little odd. Have one in rebellion here. Well, we were in 2 Corinthians 10, but we've decided now to move to 1 Corinthians. And and deal with some things there. And I, brethren, could not speak to you as spiritual. Or we might look at first or chapter 13 about love is patient, love is kind. But anyway, back in chapter 10 of 2 Corinthians. Paul begins in verse 12, or doesn't begin, but where we pick up in verse 12. He says, "For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding." Does anybody have another translation? You have, what does it say? What does it say? Does anybody have the NIV? Not wise. You know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, kind of regardless how we, unless you get into a true paraphrase, it's the language in terms of translation is going to take you into kind of verbiage that's just not typical that we're going to use. But the sense, you know, comes out. Nevertheless, you know, regardless which translation you have, is, you know, Paul is saying that, you know, here's a group of people, you know, these that have come in and causing problems at Corinth, that, you know, they set a standard. The standard is themselves, and then they measure themselves by that standard and say, "Hey, we meet the standard." You know, it's very similar to what much, if not most, legalism in terms of the Christian life is like. You know, groups pick out things that they don't do, and they set that as the standard. Now, sometimes people grow up into that, and the reason, you know, we don't drink or we don't do this or we don't dance or we don't do that because that's what we've grown up to. But when you start noticing other areas or even within those, it'll tend to be the things that people don't have an interest in doing. And then you find other things that maybe they do and it's justified because, you know, that's okay. And that's kind of the deal here is this group came in and they said, "Here's the standard. You know, we meet that standard, therefore we have authority." And Paul is saying, you know, we don't fall under their standard. You know, we haven't come in and say, you know, we're trying to meet that standard. But at the same time, you know, they're just measuring themselves by themselves, and doing that, they're without understanding. You know, they've said that they have authority because they meet their standard, but you know, it's there. You know, they're the ones that set it up. They have no authority to state it. You know, it's very interesting how authority gets transferred. I heard a guy once, and it really stuck with me. And it's so true. But he was talking about how people are authorities in one area, and then, you know, they're well established as an authority, and they'll be speaking on that area, and then they move to another area, and you just move right along with them, and they keep the same authority. And he was talking about, and this was a long time ago, you know, 30 years ago when I heard him talk about this, but, and we might not hear it as these kinds of things as much right now, but it's in the area of some well-known biologist at that time. And they, you know, be speaking on areas of their authority, you know, their fields. And even if that moves into areas of, you know, evolution, but then all of a sudden they start talking about morality. They start talking about these kind of, and it just moves right in. You know, so here's a group in a similar way that they've established themselves as an authority because they basically said, we're the authorities. Here's what's required to be an authority. We are that. We're the authorities. And Paul is saying they're without understanding in this. You know, they've simply set themselves up, and he says, we're you know, we don't try to compare ourselves to them in that regard, but they're without understanding. They have no basis for that. He moves on, he says in verse 13, but we will not boast beyond our measure, but within the measure of the sphere which God apportioned to us as a measure to reach even as far as you. You know, Paul, you know, one of the things Paul is always having to deal with in this letter that he's writing is the accusations that have been made against Paul that he's proud, he's arrogant, he boasts. And his thing is to go back to the authority of God. That, you know, these are the things that have been apportioned to him. These are the things that have been laid out for him to do. And so it's a different, you know, his deal is that, you know, his authority comes from God. It's not self-appointed. He says in verse, and then this whole thing is that even this measure that's come to him, this sphere of authority, has brought him to them to preach the gospel. Verse 14 says, for we are not overextending ourselves as if we did not reach to you, for we were the first to come even as far as you in the gospel of Christ. And so here he is, he's saying, you know, we made an effort to bring the gospel to Corinth. We were the first, you know, he's talking about his missionary team, to bring the gospel here. You know, we reached out, we came, we ventured out to you and brought the gospel. You know, Paul is reminding, you know, he often in various letters, depending on the setting, reminds people that, you know, he brought the gospel. Because, you know, like in the Galatians letter, the issue becomes, why are you embracing a new gospel, a different gospel? You know, why are you leaving the gospel that you know, first had? You said that you believed in Christ and this was salvation, and you're saved, and now you're embracing another gospel that somebody else has brought you. Well, here it's kind of, you know, without stating that, it's, you know, why do you question the authority, you know, our authority? Why do you, you know, why are you taking up and embracing other people's authority when we were the first ones to make this effort to bring you the gospel? Verse 15, he goes on from that. He says, not boasting beyond our measure. So he's not saying we don't boast in one sense, but he's saying we don't boast beyond our measure. That is, in other men's labors, but with the hope that as your faith grows, we will be within our sphere enlarged even more by you. Very interesting passage. He says, you know, that first we do not extend ourselves as if we did not reach to you, for we were the first to come even as far as you in the gospel of Christ, not boasting beyond our measure, that is, in other men's labor. So Paul didn't come boasting about what other people have actually done, now you start to see this, that people are building upon his work, trying to take credit for, you know, for it. It's not so much that Paul wants credit, but rather it's a putting down of Paul, getting rid of Paul, but claiming this. And Paul is saying, you know, we don't do that, we didn't do that. But he goes on, but with the hope that as your faith grows, we will be within our sphere enlarged even more by you. I mean, you think about that. You know, when I first read it, it just seems so confusing that he's saying, somehow as your faith grows, you know, I'll be enlarged. And yet, in that context, he's talking about a mission outreach, and we start to see how much a church really affects how ministries go. And so for Paul, if the church at Corinth continues to be negative about him and their faith doesn't grow and they you know, get continually caught up in all this disunity and these factions and all these things are going, then it doesn't give that credibility. It doesn't give that push. It doesn't give not only the credibility, but the zeal and the interest and even the resources for the gospel to continue growing. You know, there really is something about the response of a whole group that has something to do with how things go. You know, at this point, Paul's very pragmatic, if you would. It's just very realistic. This is what really happens. You know, sometimes, you know, there is that sense that God's in control. I mean, not that sense. I mean, we believe that God's in control. God can override things. That's not debatable. But yet, so often God works within these workings of how people do. And Paul is saying to him, as you respond, you have an impact on whether the gospel will continue to affect this area, impact this area and beyond, or whether or not it kind of shrivels up in its impact. And it's one of those things that seems out of place for us, because we don't often think of that. You know, we think of God's sovereignty, and it's not that God cannot override things, but yet the reality is when we start looking around in places, that's what happens. You know, that's the reality when people get caught up in other things, other interests. You know, there's a distraction, and ministry doesn't move on as it was. And so Paul is saying, but that's our hope, that as your faith grows, then it impacts the gospel, the spread of it. He moves on, verse 16, he says, so as to preach the gospel even to the regions beyond you. So that was that. It's enlarged to preach the gospel even beyond. As you respond. And we've seen this earlier, even as he talked about the gifts, he used the Macedonians as an example of, you know, of people that wanted to give. Well, see, that has encouragement beyond. If you look at Thessalonians, when he writes to the Thessalonians, which was one of his earlier letters, he, in commending them, he writes, you also, in verse 6 of chapter 1, he says, you also became imitators of us and of the Lord, having received the word in much tribulation with the joy of the Holy Spirit, so that you became an example to all the believers in Macedonia and Achaia. For the word of the Lord hath sounded forth from you, not only in Macedonia and Achaia, but also in every place your faith toward God has gone forth, so that we have no need to say anything. For they themselves report about us what kind of receptions we had with you. And he goes on and says how you turned from idols to the true and living God. You know, their response had spread around the world. Their response had made an impact. And that's essentially what Paul is saying here, is that your response, it will either have that potential to shrink up the spread of the gospel or to enlarge it. So he says, so as to preach the gospel even to the regions beyond you, and not to boast in what has been accomplished in the sphere of another. And there becomes this territorial thing where people come in and take credit for what somebody else has done, and that becomes, you know, the big deal. So it's there's nothing in Paul to suggest that Paul is out there saying, I need credit for what I accomplish, but rather he's bringing this up because there are others coming in and deflecting everything by trying to say, you know, this is our authority, this is our realm, this is what we've done, and it ends up splitting, causing factions, and deflecting from the gospel and its movement forward. And then, and so he, in verse 17, he says, but he who boasts is to boast in the Lord. So it's not, it shouldn't be about boasting of, well, you know, I won three people to Christ, or I was the first one to do this. It should, the boasting becomes what God did through me in that situation. You know, there's that tendency that we all have to put ourselves in positions to take credit for what when something happens. And you know, you can get into that sense of almost a false humility that doesn't work, where you're always deflecting things, and somebody says, oh, well, that was really good. You know, that was a great special you did this morning. You know, I really liked the singing of the choir or whatever. And then somebody goes, oh, it wasn't me. It was just the Lord. And you do, you deflect to the point that it becomes, you know, like a false humility. And so that those are hard things to, you know, to be in, because we're never going to do it perfectly, but there needs to be some sense of, not necessarily, I'm saying that we need to verbalize it always, but some sense in our mind of well, you know, thank you, you know, it was a great opportunity, I enjoyed the opportunity, thank you for your compliments, but you know, I'm aware that it's God gave me this gift, or God really infused me this morning. You know, I'm not saying that we should always say that, or we shouldn't necessarily ever say it, depending on the setting. But that attitude, that while we can say thank you, we also are acknowledging, at least to ourselves and to God, that, you know, it's God that's doing this. You know, He gave me the opportunity, or He gave me these gifts. Put me in a setting that allowed it. But that's where Paul is here. Is if we're going to boast, it should be to boast in God. And he's picking this up, you know, out of Isaiah, likely, or Jeremiah, excuse me, I mean, Jeremiah 9:29 or 4, where Jeremiah is saying, you know, if you're going to boast, boast in this. You know, don't let the rich person boast in his riches. Don't let the wise person boast in how wise he is. But if you're going to boast, boast in this, that I know God, you know. You know, that's a really an interesting kind of thing. And then he ends in verse 18 saying, for it is not he who commends himself that is approved, but he whom the Lord commends. And there we go. There's that thing of, you know, I commend you, you know, Rob commends you, John commends you. There's a point that it doesn't really matter. Who does God commend? And you'll admit, in the reverse of this is when criticism comes. I mean, there's a place we should always, I don't know if I'd say always, normally, you know, that one ought to look at criticism and say, what truth's in this criticism? You know, I've heard the guy that was the founder of Navigators was saying that you should always look for the kernel of truth in criticism. There's always a kernel of truth. And I'm no longer convinced there's always a kernel of truth. But I think that's a good perspective to have. You know, that one should examine it and say, okay, I may not be really totally wrong here, but how did I play into this? You know, how did I contribute to this? But, you know, when we look at criticism sometimes, you know, we may be at that point where we're saying, well, you know, I can't do that anymore. I can't sing. I can't do this. I can't teach Sunday school because somebody criticized me. You know, the reverse of this is also true, I think. You know, because it's basically saying, let God be the judge. God is going to be your standard. Now, you can do that arrogantly, where you're just saying, hey, who are you to judge me? If God wants to judge me, God can judge me. God's happy with me, you know. And you kind of set yourself up as your own standard again, even though you're saying it's God. That's the same thing. But on the other hand, and Paul does say this you know, earlier, where it's that sense of I'm not going to judge myself. I don't even judge myself. Now, there has to be a level where he's saying he does judge himself, but not in that sense of they were setting up these standards. You know what I mean? God's there. And if we're always running around second-guessing ourselves and listening to every criticism that comes, then we end up being paralyzed. But here he's talking about boasting. And so he's saying, if we're going to worry about being commended, let's let God commend us. Look at his standards, his basis of doing this. And so Paul moves from, in this chapter, from the gifts that he's been talking about back into this area of conflict and these that are opposed to him. But as we read through this again, look at all the things that Paul is saying that he's not. And as we look and highlight the things that he's saying he's not, to recognize that certainly has to be the area of conflict. That has to be things that others are making accusations about. And this becomes the content of the conflict in this, as he's addressed here. Verse 12 says, "For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves, but when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding." So he said here, we're not bold to class or compare ourselves. Well, that means other people are. Verse 13, "But we will not boast beyond our measure." Likely others are boasting beyond their measure. But he moves on. "But within the measure of the sphere which God apportioned to us as the measure to reach even as far as you. For we do not overextend ourselves." Well, either other people are overextending themselves, or more likely here, they're making this accusation against Paul. It says, "For we were the first to come even as far as you in the gospel of Christ, not boasting beyond our measure." So once again, this idea of boasting. "That is, in other men's labors, but with the hope that as your faith grows, we will be enlarged, we will be within our sphere enlarged even more by you, so as to preach the gospel even to the regions beyond, and not to boast in what has been accomplished in the sphere of another." So you have this another one, not to boast. "But he who boasts is to boast in the Lord. For it is not he who commends himself," so once again back to this commending, "himself is approved, but he whom the Lord commends." And so the two main things has to do with about this commending yourself and boasting. And both come from the standpoint of I've established myself as the authority. Paul goes back to his authority, not so much here, but in other places. Paul's authority, and that's why it's repeated so many times in his letters and Acts, is in his speeches, that Paul goes back to, it's when Christ called me. This experience on Damascus Road, when I received the gospel and the gospel's come to me, you know, it's this gospel, that's the authority. And so obviously as an apostle, he has an authority and experience beyond, you know, what we're going to have. But at the same time, we could take that in terms of application and saying, you know, our authority becomes based upon, you know, the statements of God in the Bible. What is he calling us to? And where we run into problems today is when somebody says, I have this authority because I had this dream, or the Lord said to me, or, you know, and it's always amazing how God can tell me what you should be doing, and why can't he just tell you? That seems to me to be the reasonable question. Why does he need to tell me what you should do? Why doesn't he just tell you? And I think those would be the questions that, you know, are appropriate in those settings. I mean, when people are setting themselves up as authority. And that happens. I think I most likely have mentioned this somewhere along the line, but the first time I encountered this, I had been a Christian a very short time, and I was with a friend at this church that he had kind of served as a youth pastor the summer before, and it was kind of, I guess it was mainly a high school group, but there were some college kids or kids that were college age in it. And I don't even know what the discussion was about. The discussion became, you know, kind of one of those argument things of different people. And I remember this one guy said, well, the Lord just revealed to me. And he said whatever his answer was. And I remember at that, I can still even see it there, you know, just, it's like, well, then that settles it, doesn't it? And there wasn't anything else said after that. Now, somebody could challenge that and saying, well, that's funny. The Lord just revealed to me and show, hey, you know, where does that come from? But do you see what happens when we set ourselves up as authorities? Then, I mean, if what he's saying, you know, you take it there, well, there is no more discussion. If the Lord just revealed to him this, that's it. But the question becomes, did the Lord really reveal that to him? Or has he set himself up as his own standard? And so I think that's where that becomes. I think the applications for us, you know, become in terms of, you know, do we set those standards and then say, oh, I live up to that, therefore I've arrived, or I'm authority. And then the other one, this whole area of, you know, where Paul is saying, you know, not, you know, letting God commend us. I think probably the opposite becomes the application for us in terms of not, you know, buying into every criticism, not being upset because not everybody doesn't commend us, and to take that honestly to God and say, Lord, do you have a criticism of this? But clearly to remember this sense of boasting, you know, that ever we're going to boast, that, you know, our boasting should be in God and not what we accomplish, but, you know, being thankful that he accomplishes something through us and make our boast in him. Well, you have thoughts or insights or...